It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel, all at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Welcome to the RTC Weekly Download, where we recreate past radio and bring it to you. That's the whole idea behind recreations, right? Well, it's spring in this part of the country, so we're going to have some comedy on this week's program, but we're first going to feature some science fiction. And this is from the series 2000 Plus. It's Flying Saucers. Now, we don't have a date for this one, other than 1950.
I was alone in a room 100,000 miles from Earth. My body lay dead before me, and yet I spoke and felt and lived. Behind me lay a tortured world. Before me, the moon and destiny. Again, I felt a surge of power, and had I been able to, I would have smiled. My mission was accomplished. No one knew, no one understood. If they had, they would not believe. This was a project 3,000 years old. Yet no one had guessed. No one.
Listen now to 2000 Plus. Adventures into the world of tomorrow. Science fiction stories from the years beyond 2000 A.D. Today, a story entitled The Flying Saucers. It is the year 2000 plus 12. A blazing New Mexico sun shines down upon a great military installation, upon a vast, noisy field, and upon a silvery shape which seems to strain forward, ready to leap up into space. In an executive office, a man sits in his chair, his eyes on the great rocket. Behind him, a girl waits for him to speak.
Better close that window, Eileen. The noise won't let a man think.
Yes, sir.
That's better.
I'm ready, Dr. Bronson.
Get this on tape as well as in shorthand. It's for the permanent files in Washington. It's got to go out in the next jet. I'll give you a signed sheet of stationery. Send it off to make the 5 o'clock connection. You got that?
Yes, sir. Recorder on. The letter to be transcribed over your signature and sent off on the 5 o'clock connecting plane.
Right. Heading, top secret. 2, National Scientific Council. Copies to Joint Chiefs of Staff, Secretary of Defense, the President. From Andrew Bronson. Forget the usual string of titles, Eileen. Chief Department of Extraterrestrial Research, White Sands, New Mexico. Regarding defense measures against aerial visitors listed in file AA-286 as flying saucers. 1. For the past 3 months, this secret experimental installation has been visited by flying saucers. First appearance coincided with the launching of our secret flying missile, Zeus. Details in reports CB-286, A, B, and C. 2. Although the flying saucers have never landed, the frequency of their visits has tripled since the launching. As reported in the files cited, Zeus has not yet returned. 3. In view of the importance to national security of this secret installation and its experiments, the reports already mentioned were reviewed by JCS and the National Scientific Council. It was decided that the flying saucers were a potential menace and that countermeasures be undertaken. 4. Zeus 2, an improved model of our secret flying missile, has been completed and armed. It is equipped with mass attraction and proximity fuse devices. Warhead contains 5,000 pounds hexenite. Firing control automatic. See file CB-344. 5. The station has been placed in condition alert. Next visit from the flying saucers is expected momentarily. In view of the foregoing, we are in complete readiness. We will attack. Repeat. We will attack. Now, where's my pen?
Andrew.
This one doesn't work.
Oh, I'll get it. I saw your pen in your vest.
Don't touch that vest. I'll get it myself.
Did I do something wrong?
No. Well, you might have been hurt.
Hurt?
Oh, never mind. There you are, my signature. Now, on your way.
Andrew, why can't I stay?
You know the orders, Eileen. We're going to test Zeus, too. You know anything can happen. Maybe the flying saucers will come back. If they do, we'll be ready for them. Besides, if the rudder should go wrong or the hexenite detonate... No. On your way now. The jet car's waiting downstairs.
Oh, very well. But you will be careful, won't you?
Of course. Eileen.
Yes?
I've never told you...
Yes?
Never mind. Au revoir, my dear. Au revoir, my darling. Dr. Bronson to security. Come in, security.
Security, aye.
Has Miss Harkness phoned in yet?
No, sir.
Well, that's funny. I expected her to after sending off the latest reports. She should be home now. Are you sure?
Yes, sir.
Now, something must have happened to her. Send a security officer to check. What about the setup for the new test?
All ready, sir.
Oh, that's good. I hope nothing happens. Any report of flying saucers?
No, sir, not yet. But, sir, there's something funny about that. Every time we get ready for a test, even one of the minor missiles, one of the saucers appears. That's too much of a coincidence for comfort, sir.
Yes, I've thought of that, too. You think there's a leak somewhere?
Yes, we've checked and rechecked. Nothing. But there's no doubt that someone's passing out information.
I see.
Of course, we'll keep on checking. Whoever is responsible...
Dr. Bronson. Radar control to Dr. Bronson.
Bronson here. What is it?
Flying saucer detected and registered. Computation center fed data. Data follows. Distance, 486 miles. Height, 50.2 miles. Speed, 5 miles per second. Estimated time of arrival at contact point, 1 minute, 58 seconds from now.
One over. 58. Right. Alert fire control.
Fire control alerted, sir. When may we expect you?
In 30 seconds. Over and off. Are you still on security?
Aye, sir.
Clear the field.
Field already cleared. I've just sent emergency red signal. We're waiting in control, sir.
Very well. I'm coming down right now. Over and off. Let me have my headset and hand mic, Scotty.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Bronson, the fire control.
Fire control to Bronson. Everything ready here, Chief. Dolly's cleared from Zeus 2. Warhead armed.
Well done. Bronson, the computation.
Computation.
Your figures checked through cybernetics?
Yes, sir. As reported, Zeus 2 should destroy flying saucers 6 seconds after blastoff. Firing time, 2,200, 33 hours, 36 seconds.
Time check, everyone. Time is now 32 seconds to blastoff. Condition red. I shall operate fire control remote. Strap in for firing. Security.
Security, aye.
Report.
Field cleared, guards alerted and shielded, anti-radiation up, warhead armed, Zeus 2 ready. Any further?
10 seconds.
9, 8, 7, 6, Five, four, three, two, one, fire! Get a bearing on that trajectory computation.
Trajectory established, being Fatty Mac. Trajectory correct, sir. Parabolic sound reflectors receiving. Contact 223342,
Red Adenosha. Good work, everyone. Security.
Security, hi.
Condition green. Well, boys. Now to wait till someone phones in where the pieces fell. And then maybe we'll be finally knowing what the flying saucers are. Yes, Scotty. Has security located Eileen Harkness?
No, sir, not yet. Captain McDonald is here, sir. He has a man with him, says you should see him immediately.
Well, all right, bring him in. Yes, what is it?
McDonald thought you'd like to hear this, sir. This is Al Waters, a rancher from upstate. He flew down from his ranch this morning and reported to the state police. They sent him to us.
The saucer?
Yes, sir.
Where is it, Mr. Waters, the wreck?
Wreck? I didn't see no wreck, Doc.
What did you see?
I seen a flying saucer come down about half a mile from my ranch house. Saw it this morning when I was going after a lost calf.
He swears the saucer's undamaged, Dr. Brunson.
Huh. Well, it may not be the one we... You flew down, Mr. Waters?
Yep, got my own jet plane.
Well, can you take me up with you to your ranch, I mean?
Sure can. I'm glad to.
All right, we'll leave immediately. Scotty, you round up the crew, everyone. Have them load everything we need on the transport, the big job. When can I expect you?
Oh, give us 2 hours, sir.
All right. Now, Mr. Waters, let's get to your ranch.
There's the flying saucer, Doc.
Where?
You see them two peaks? That plateau between them, you see it? There, now the sun's hit it.
It is undamaged.
I'm putting her down.
Did you see any signs of life? Anything moving?
No, sir. Of course, I didn't get too close. I was might leery the thing.
I understand. It's just as well you didn't.
Hey, wait till she stops rolling, Doc. Sure are excited, ain't you?
I'm afraid so. Even scientists get excited sometimes.
Here. Sure is big, ain't she?
Yes. Must be over 300 feet in diameter. Now, there's an airlock.
Hey, you ain't going in.
Was that round door open when you first saw this?
I don't know. I don't remember. If you're going in, Doc, I'm going with you.
Well, thank you.
It'll be safer. There's two of us. Ain't got a gun?
No.
I'm glad I got mine, then. Never can tell what you'll bump into. Don't you think you ought to wait for the rest of your gang?
I can't. I've got to see what's in there.
Okay.
Watch your head.
Right.
The inner door is still closed. Let's hope it'll open. It will.
Look at that. Sure looks complicated, don't it?
This must be the control room. I can't wait to inspect it.
Ain't that another door over there?
Yes. You'd better stay here. Don't touch anything. I'll see if there's anyone still aboard.
Okay, Doc. Keep your eyes open.
Larger room. This must be the crew's quarters. There's no one here. Let's... What's that? I felt giddy for a second. Well, I'll take a look through. Eileen, wake up. Wake up. Unconscious. Eileen? Still unconscious. How did she get here? I've got to get a doctor. Waters, what are you doing at that control board?
If you look through the porthole, Dr. Bronson, you'll notice that we're miles up, still accelerating. We would have been higher if I hadn't to take such care with my takeoff.
Waters, are you crazy? Who are you? Where are you taking me? Us.
You were right when you guessed that this is not the saucer you destroyed. It isn't. You were wrong when you said there was no crew on board. There is. You see, I am the crew. You should consider yourself very fortunate, Dr. Bronson. It's not everyone who can view the Earth from a distance of 100,000 miles.
You can put that gun away. Let me take care of Miss Harkness.
I've already assured you there's nothing wrong with her. Merely an advanced soporific. She'll recover quickly. In fact, here she is now.
Andrew.
Eileen, stay where you are. He has a gun.
Where are we? How did I get here?
I think you'd better sit down, Miss Harkness.
Who's he?
I don't know. He calls himself Waters.
Where are we? I looked out of a porthole.
Don't be frightened, Eileen. We're on a flying saucer.
A flying saucer?
Yes. How did you get here?
I don't know. I sent off the report, got into the car, and woke up here.
One of my operatives. I shall now engage the automatic controls, and the ship will fly itself until we get to the moon.
The moon?
Yes, that is our first stop. You see, fast as this saucer is, it would take us centuries to get to our ultimate destination. So we must transfer to a matter converter at our base on the moon, and we shall be in Kor almost instantly.
Kor? What are you talking about?
Perhaps a little explanation is due you. We Kor are the inhabitants of the solar system you know as Rigel.
But that's 500 light years away.
Exactly. Although the speed of what you Earthmen have been pleased to call our flying saucers is approximately that of light, even that speed would entail a round trip of 1,000 years. True, the Kor are almost immortal, but for efficiency's sake, we set up a matter converter to flash us, or rather I should say our operatives, through space, instantaneously. Our base is on the dark side of the moon. From there, we transship to the saucers.
But why? Why are you so interested in Earth? Why haven't you let us know? Sent representatives to the World Council?
One thing at a time, Dr. Bronson. I see you partake of your pulp writer's suspicions that we intend to take over the Earth. The truth is just the opposite. We want Earth left strictly alone for our research.
How can we believe that?
The truth is self-explanatory. We've been visiting the Earth for over 3,000 years.
3,000 years?
Yes, Miss Harkness.
But why? For what reason?
A very simple reason. Our interests differ from yours. Without research, we become bored. To spend eternity in boredom. Well, we are primarily psychologists, social psychologists. While you were engrossed in a mechanical civilization, of course, we fostered that development.
I still don't understand it.
I didn't expect you to. However, in every society, there are certain problems, shall I say, which can only be solved experimentally. We have used you humans in our experiments. It's been extremely interesting.
You mean you've been using us as guinea pigs, as experimental animals?
You may put it that way if you wish.
I still don't see how.
Through our operatives.
That's the third time you've mentioned operatives. What do you mean?
We Kor possess no body, as you know it. We are constructed of energy. In order for us to visit Earth, it was necessary for us to construct human bodies and to inhabit them. We thereupon had an operative who could go to work on Earth.
You couldn't have gotten away with it. Someone must have suspected you.
Exactly. There were a few suspicions. So we took the memory of life on Kor away from our operatives and landed them on Earth, complete with an Earth history. You may remember Alexander the Great. He was one of our operatives. And François Villon, his task was to satirize his time and to lead the unrest which brought on the French Revolution. There we had another, Marat.
Villon, Marat. It's incredible.
Not at all. As one of your Earthmen, Emerson, said, an institution is the lengthened shadow of one man. We saw to it that the key men in each age were ours, our operatives. The problems they set Earth gave our scientists much material to work with. Enough for another few thousand years.
Then our inventions, our scientific advances were pushed on by you?
Yes, like giving an ape a stick to see what he will do with it.
Then our wars, our revolutions?
Naturally, wars and revolutions are part of the research. They're all part of the master plan. But don't forget, we fostered genius, too.
Why are you telling us all this?
Surely that must be clear even to you. You are perhaps the leading scientist in America, certainly the leading figure in the use of atomic power for extraterrestrial research, a key man. But doesn't that suggest something to you?
No. I can't believe it.
Certainly, my dear Bronson. You are one of our operatives. You've done your work. But your experiments have endangered our base on the moon. So it's time to transport you back to core.
Mm.
Ah, the signal. Mm. We are approaching our base.
Mm.
It will be a comfort to leave this unpleasant body and to resume my right...
Bronson, put down that hand.
Oh. Here, put this handkerchief over your nose, Eileen. The gas will clear away in a moment. Ah. I think it's all right now. The full force was directed at this core.
Oh, what was it?
I had a gas pen in my vest, an idea which was originated after some of our scientists were kidnapped by the Eastern Alliance. Oh. I never thought I'd have to use it on something like this.
Is he dead?
No. He's merely unconscious for a few minutes. The gas is harmless. See if you can find something to put around his hands and feet while I see if I can operate the controls. We've got to get back to Earth.
All right, Andrew.
They won't believe our story, but they'll have to believe the ship.
I can't find anything to use.
You'd better hurry.
All right. Andrew.
What is it? We haven't much time.
I thought you said the gas was harmless.
Of course it is.
But this man isn't unconscious. He's dead.
Dead?
There's no pulse, no breathing, no heartbeat. Oh, Andrew.
Now get hold of yourself. I don't know how to... If it was his life or ours, Eileen...
I neglected to inform you that a core of the upper grades can leave his body as he pleases. I see that I underestimated you, Dr. Bronson. You saw immediately that my weakest point was the human body of which I complained. Very clever.
I can't move.
I need no futile arms and hands in this form. A core carries power, for a core is power.
I take it you will rid us of our bodies, too.
Precisely.
Isn't there anything... If we promise to forget, you can make us forget.
Unfortunately, the matter is out of my hands. My orders were to recall two operatives.
Two?
Yes. Miss Harkness was a psychometrist in her previous, incarnation? An excellent one, too, Draga, or Eileen, as you're now called.
But this is inhuman.
Precisely. I am not human.
Let Eileen go. I'll go with you gladly, but Eileen...
No, Andrew. Take me instead.
The answer is the same for both of you. No.
What kind of fiends are you? Isn't there one of you with pity? Just one who knows what we feel, who's felt the agony of the millions you've made your guinea pigs?
You're speaking of sympathy? No. Yes, I stand corrected. There was one, of course, who felt that strange emotion. Carter. An odd being, as I recall.
And I suppose you killed him?
No. A core being energy cannot be destroyed. We captured Carter and exiled him to your planet. An enormous task. He was one of our greatest scientists. That makes it all the more strange, you see. He wished to stop our experiment. Well, we lost track of him, but no matter. The unfit must go. That is the paramount law of nature. Enough of these digressions. It is time...
Let me say goodbye.
A little time must elapse before I can build up the energy to free you of your body. You may have the time. Besides, it is a new experience to me. Most interesting.
Eileen, darling, it's too late now, but I want you to know I love you. I've loved you ever since you walked into my office 3 years ago.
And I love you, Andrew. I always have. I always will.
I'm very touching.
Don't be afraid, my darling.
This touching of lip to lip, very interesting. Energy is undoubtedly transmitted. Very well, Dr. Bronson. It is time.
No, take me first. Let him go. Andrew.
Your emotion is senseless. I'm merely returning the two of you to your true being.
Oh, Andrew. My darling. My darling.
So this is your odd emotion called love? This should make an interesting report. A minor report, it is true, but...
You have done your work, O Loka. You have done your work too well.
You are not the operative I was sent for?
No. I am Kada, at last. But now with 2 centuries of power... Power I learned on Earth. There is no core who can withstand me now. Sympathy is the ability to feel what others feel. How do you feel now, Loka?
I don't understand. Unscientific. Unscientific.
No. Say mercy. Say it.
Unscient. Mercy. Mercy.
There shall be changes on Kor. We must leave Earth alone to work out its destiny in its own way. Now go to the converter and await me there. Draga. Myelin.
Andrew,
don't be afraid. The transition is painless. There is so much for us to do on Kor, so much to teach you.
Oh, Andrew, I can't. I'm so frightened.
Don't be me. Your power will soon be with me. For you too are Kor. What those fools didn't know, that emotion too is power. With your love and mine, we can right the wrongs Kor has done to Earth. There is eternity for both of us to spend together. Eileen. Draga.
I'm ready. My darling. Now.
And forever.
Next week on 2000 Plus, another dramatic story of unbelievable adventure. The story of a world of the past locked in the world of tomorrow. Time out of hand. Be sure to listen. 2000 Plus is produced and directed by Dreyer and Winolson Productions, Incorporated. In today's production, Ralph Bell portrayed Dr. Bronson, Louis Van Ruten was Waters, Bryna Rayburn was Eileen, Ken Williams was Scotty. The script was written by Pierre Gerson. The orchestra was conducted by Emerson Buckley, music composed by Elliot Jacoby, sound Walt Shaver and Adrian Penner, engineer Martin Enghauser. This is Ken Marvin speaking. Thank you.
From the series 2000 Plus, that's Flying Saucers from 1950. Well, now it's time for comedy, and as I mentioned earlier, it's kind of the springtime, so we're going to have a program about Easter bonnets, and this is a sketch from Baby Snooks from March 20th of 1951.
The Baby Snooks Show! Starring Fanny Bryce as Baby Snooks with Hanley Stafford as Daddy and brought to you by Tums.
My daddy loves them.
Hello, everyone. This is Don Wilson. How fast do you drink your morning coffee? 10 seconds? 15? You don't know? Ah, but your stomach does. Because those hasty swallows of coffee and orange juice you gulp down on the run often bring on acid indigestion and heartburn. So right after breakfast, try taking a couple of Tums. See how fast Tums soothe and comfort acid-upset stomach. See how much better you feel all morning long. Get Tums tonight. Still only 10 cents a roll, 3-roll package a quarter everywhere. T-U-M-S, Tums for the tummy. And now to Sycamore Terrace and the Higgins family. Well, Easter is almost here, and with it the new outfits for that stroll down the avenue on Easter Sunday. Ah, but Easter finery costs money, and money is what poor Daddy Higgins is always without. Having been victorious in the battle with Mummy, who wanted a new Easter outfit, he's just started the second one with Snooks.
Why can't I have a new Easter outfit?
Oh, first Mummy, now you. Well, if you must know, I don't have the money. My job doesn't offer that kind of remuneration.
What you said?
Remuneration. Look, it's time you learn a new word. Tell me, what do I carry home every Saturday night?
Uncle Louie.
I mean my paycheck. It's all spent.
Well, Pamela Richardson is getting a new Easter outfit, and I want one too.
Oh, so that's it. Well, Pamela's father happens to be a banker. I don't have his kind of money.
What kind do you have?
I don't mean it that way. We have the same money, but he has a whole lot more.
Well, why aren't you smart enough to be a banker?
I am smart enough. I'm just not lucky. I never got the opportunity.
Well, Mommy says since you and she got married, you passed up every opportunity.
I wish I'd passed up that one, too. Forget Pamela and new Easter clothes.
Well, if you was a banker, would you have lots of money, too?
Why, of course.
Well, why don't you get to be a banker?
By lending other people money.
Is that how you become a banker?
Yes, it is.
Then your worries are over. I can fix it for you now to be a banker.
Oh, how?
Lend me $30.
A banker lends out thousands of dollars.
All right, then lend me thousands.
Will you please stop bothering me?
Well, I want to look as nice as Pamela on Easter Sunday.
Look, honey, I just can't afford it. What if Pamela does have nicer clothes? Does that make her happier than you?
It sure does.
It does not.
Well, how do you know how happy I am?
Snooks, you mean you aren't happy?
I cried in my sleep all last night.
Oh, you didn't.
I thought my little heart would break.
Why, Snooks, honey, I didn't know. Honest, I didn't. What made my baby cry in her little bed?
The spring busted in my mouth.
I was talking about happiness. Look, run along and forget clothes. I'm broke.
All right. I guess Pamela was right about us being poor white trash.
Hey, wait a minute. Pamela said that?
Yeah, and she laughed and said, "You're too poor to buy me new clothes."
Oh, she did.
Yes, she did.
Well, we'll just show her. All right, we're all going to have new Easter outfits. I'm going to do something I've never done before.
What's that?
You and I are going right down to Mr. Richardson's bank and try to get a personal loan of $300. Come on.
Thank you.
Mr. Richardson will see me in a few minutes about my loan, Snooks.
Mm-hmm.
So stay right here.
Gee, Daddy, look at that man over there behind the bars.
What about it?
What's he in for?
He's not in for anything. He's a teller.
He's a teller?
Yes.
Can I go over and listen?
A teller is a person in a bank who takes in and pays out money. He doesn't tell things. Now be quiet.
What's all those windows, Daddy? There's so many of them.
I know. Well, all banks have them. There's a paying window, a receiving window, loan and interest window, Christmas fund window.
Well, where's the one Uncle Louie always goes to?
Uncle Louie?
Yeah.
Which one is that?
The $2 window.
Look, you don't find $2 windows in banks. You only find them at racetracks.
Why?
Because a bank isn't like a racetrack.
Well, what's the difference?
There's a big difference. The money a man puts in a bank, his wife spends. At least at the racetrack, he gets to watch the horses. Now, will you please be...
Mr. Richardson will see you now.
Oh, come on, Snooks.
At that door right over there.
Thank you.
Come in.
Oh, hello, Mr. Richardson.
Well, how do you do, Mr. Higgins?
This is my little daughter, Snooks. She and your daughter are great little pals, you know.
That's right. I love Pamela.
Well, I'm certainly glad to hear that. I was afraid that Pamela had become spoiled and conceited that nobody could like her.
Yeah, you can say that again.
Snooks.
Well, I was only agreeing with him.
No apologies necessary, Mr. Higgins. I realize that I have pampered Pamela too much for her own good. She's inclined to act superior to people. But I guess I just love her too much.
I love her, too. I'm just mad about her.
But I suppose I shouldn't.
You shouldn't?
No.
All right, then let's hate her.
Snooks. Anyway, Mr. Richardson, in view of our daughter's mutual friendship, I felt you might think me coldly businesslike if I didn't come to you personally for what I need.
Just what do you need, Mr. Higgins?
A loan. A small loan?
Yeah, just a teeny-weeny little loan.
Oh, I see. Well, Mr. Higgins, in spite of our mutual friendship, I still must adhere to banking policy, which, as I'm sure you know, makes it necessary to check with the condition of all people who borrow money.
You gotta check Daddy's condition?
Yes. Tell me, Mr. Higgins, do you have collateral?
Oh, no. All he has is a little sinus trouble.
Snooks, please, your help isn't helping me at all. Look, Mr. Richardson, the reason I need money is because I don't have collateral. I'm just plain broke, and I need $300 for Easter outfits for the family. But I've got a steady job.
Easter outfits? Well, I hardly consider that a worthy reason for my risking an unsecured loan.
Oh, but Mr. Richardson,
Higgins, policy is policy.
Well, there go our Easter outfits.
Gee, I guess we're going to be poor. Just poor white trash, like Paula said.
Just a minute. My daughter said that? Pamela said that?
Pamela said that. She said my daddy couldn't buy me a new Easter outfit like she's getting.
Mr. Higgins, I've reconsidered. For reasons of my own, I'll lend you the money. Come in first thing tomorrow morning. We'll arrange the loan.
Well, why, thank you, Mr. Richardson.
Gee, Daddy, now we can all get new Easter outfits. Oh, I'm so glad. Daddy, how come we're going to shop right now at the department store? You ain't getting the money till tomorrow.
Because now that I know I'm getting it, I can go ahead and charge everything. First, we'll buy you an Easter bonnet right over there. Come on.
Oh, how do you do, sir? Something for the little miss?
Yes, we'd like to see some of your Easter bonnets.
Oh, well, here's a charming little bonnet. Do you like it, little girl?
It's too plain. Could you put on that pretty pink bow over there?
Why, sure.
And that sweet little bunch of daisies?
All right.
And that beautiful little red rose?
Fine. There we are.
Oh, that's just so pretty.
Good. Well, shall I wrap it up?
No, I hate it.
Now, Snooks, don't things start getting difficult.
But I don't like it, Dad.
Don't worry, sir. I have loads of patience. Just loads. Oh, I know. How about this little green bonnet? You know, green like spring and nature. Things budding, birds on the wing.
And it's such a pretty shade of green.
Yes, isn't it?
I never saw such a pretty shade of green.
Neither have I.
There's only one thing I wish.
What's that?
I wish it was red.
I'm afraid she is a bit difficult.
Yes, I'm beginning to think it isn't going to be so easy to please this little miss.
Little miss? As far as my wife and I are concerned, this is a big miss. Oh, nothing, nothing. I guess you'd better show her something else.
Well, fortunately, as I said before, I do have loads of patience. Now, how about this flat straw with a big old-fashioned black velvet bow?
I don't like it. It looks like a flying saucer.
Well, you look strange enough to be coming out of one. I mean, it's really very pretty.
Well, I don't care. I don't like it.
Look, will you please make up your mind?
Gee, why are you getting mad? I thought you said you had loads of patience.
I do, but you're making me dump my whole load. Now, we'll try again, shall we?
Yeah.
How about this bonnet here?
Oh, that is nice.
At last.
But I want a lot of more stuff on it. I want a real Easter bonnet.
Well, what sort of stuff do you mean?
Well, put on that chocolate Easter bunny there.
Chocolate?
Yeah.
On a hat?
Yeah.
Oh, put it on, anything to please her.
Well, all right.
And put on some of them marshmallow eggs.
On a hat?
Yeah.
Right.
And some of them little candy chickens.
On a hat?
Yeah.
Well, frankly, I think it's getting a little loaded, and I wish I were, too. Is there anything else you want on it?
Yeah, sprinkle some of those jelly beans on.
Well, there you are. On your hat, you now have a chocolate Easter bunny, two marshmallow eggs, three kid chicks, and a handful of jelly beans.
Yeah, that's it.
Will that be it? Fine. Shall I wrap it up?
No. I'll eat it here.
Well, Vera, between you and me, we put in quite an afternoon of shopping.
Well, you know me. Since I got your call to go ahead and charge a new Easter outfit, I was off like a flash.
I'm sure glad Richardson okayed that loan for me tomorrow morning. Well, by the way, where's Snooks?
Oh, she couldn't wait to show it off to Pamela Richardson. The way Pamela's been picking on her, she couldn't resist the temptation. Oh, here she is now.
Why, Snooks, honey, what's wrong?
Yes, what is it, dear?
Pamela said I still look like white trash.
Oh, she did she? Well, she shouldn't get away with a thing like that.
She didn't. I punched her right in the nose.
Well, that's fine. Oh, no! My loan! My poor loan! There it is. That has to be Richardson. Hello, Mr. Richardson.
Oh, so you know who it is, Higgins.
Mr. Richardson, are you mad at me the whole 300?
What?
Couldn't you just be mad at me $150 worth?
Higgins, since you seem to know the reason for my call, any further conversation is unnecessary. And don't show up tomorrow morning thinking I'll change my mind, because I won't. Goodbye, Mr. Higgins.
Snooks, I'd whip you right now, except for one thing.
You love me.
No, I don't want to rumple your new dress. It's going back.
Say, Don, mind if I park here for a while?
Well, why? Who are you hiding from?
Well, I'm not hiding. It's my birthday, and I can't bear to look at the fancy food my wife is fixing. Gives me acid indigestion.
I've got the wrong idea, my friend. Go home and enjoy yourself. I mean, tuck into the banquet and enjoy your food.
But my acid indigestion.
Take Tums and forget it. Tums instantly start to settle and soothe away the nagging distress of over-acid stomach. Relieve heartburn and you're feeling fine again in no time.
Say, Don Wilson, that's for me.
You bet. Tums are for all of you good people who want to eat what you like without a moment's fear of acid indigestion.
But wait a minute. How much do Tums cost? I'm not a millionaire, you know.
Tums are still only 10 cents a roll. And $1 million couldn't buy you more glorious relief from acid indigestion than Tums give you for a dime. What's more, when you buy the big economy box, you get 12 10-cent rolls of Tums for only $1. Get T-U-M-S, Tums for the tummy, tonight. Well, it looks like the Higgins family is not going to have a happy Easter, thanks to Snooks. When she punched Pamela in the nose, she punched Daddy right out of a $300 loan for Easter clothes. At the moment, he's telling his woes to his next-door neighbor, Randolph Kunk.
Yeah, Kunk, all the clothes we charge will have to go back.
Say, that is tough.
Unless I can arrange a loan somewhere else.
Oh, you're going to try to get another loan, huh? Look, Higgy, we've been friends for a long time.
Yes, Kunkel, yes.
And whenever we're in trouble, we always come to each other, don't we?
Right.
And now there's a cash problem.
Yeah, come on, Kunkel. Say what you're going to say.
All right. If you get the loan, will you split it with me?
Great. I thought you were going to lend me the money.
Yeah, I would, but I'm too broke from buying Easter outfits myself. And on top of that, Martha just clipped me for my last 20 to pay a beauty parlor bill.
I know what you mean. I just wish I had the fortune Vera spends on face creams alone.
Well, it's actually a necessary expense, Higgy. As I see it, there's one big factor that makes women spend all that money on their face.
Oh, really? What factor is that?
Imax.
Oh, stop! This is a serious problem to me.
Well, now, look, you've been working for Weemish for almost 10. Maybe he'll lend you the money.
I've never even been able to get a raise out of him.
Well, he might not be as hard as you think. Tell him how much it means to your wife and children. In fact, take Snooks down there to help you play on his sympathy.
Say, that's worth a try.
Sure.
The old skinflint might not have the heart to turn down a child. I'll get a hold of Snooks right now. Mr. Weemish will see us in a few moments, Snooks. Mm-hmm. Now, do you remember what I want you to tell him?
I think so.
Well, just to be safe, I'll run over it with you once more. My father has worked hard for you for the better part of a decade.
Mm-hmm.
You got that so far?
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
My father has worked hard for you, and the better part of him is decayed.
That is decade. Now, let's get on with the rest. During that time, he has asked nothing of you. And now he's miserable that he has to stand and face you for a loan. Let's hear the whole thing.
All right. My daddy has worked hard for the better part of a decade.
Go on.
During that time, he has asked nothing of you and has had to stand your miserable face alone.
Dickwit! Forget the whole thing. Just keep in mind that I need money and you are here to play on his sympathy.
All right, Daddy.
All right, Higgins, come on in.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Weemish. Come on, Snooks.
Higgins, why did you have to bring that little pest with you?
Oh, I won't bother nobody, Mr. Weemish. I'll just sit in the corner and play with your mean cat.
My mean cat?
Yeah, Daddy told me you had a sour puss.
she really didn't hear me say that, Mr. Weemish.
Never mind, Higgins, never mind. What is it you want to talk to me about?
Well, Mr. Weemish, I've worked for you for a long time now, and I've never asked much.
Well, it's mutual, Higgins. You've never done much.
But I've tried, and now I need help, and you're the only one I can come to. I need a loan of
$300. $300? That's a lot of money, Higgins. Of course, if it's for an emergency, I might consider it. On the other hand, if it's for something foolish like Jackson in the shipping department wanted $100 advance just to buy some Easter clothes. Ha! Ridiculous. Naturally, I turned him down.
Oh, naturally.
Well, what's your story? Well?
Sorry, we need some time to change it.
Well, the reason I need the money is, it's on account of Vera. You see, she's sick. Oh, she's very sick.
Sick? Of what?
Of wearing the same old clothes.
Stokes, this is no time to joke about your mother's illness, for which we need the money. Get it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Poor Mommy's awful sick.
Oh, yes, Mr. Weemish. Just this morning, I took Vera's temperature, and it was 105.
105?
And that was in the shade, too.
Higgins, this does sound serious.
Oh, it is, Mr. Weemish. The doctor says she'll need an operation. And that's why I need the $300.
Yes, you'll need an operation.
Well, Snooks, Lancelot, I'm very sorry to hear this. What are they going to operate on Vera for?
Appendix.
Gallstones.
What?
Gallstones.
Appendix.
Appendix.
Gallstones.
Huh?
Once more, maybe we can come out together.
Higgins, what's going on here?
Well, you see, she has both appendix and gallstones.
Oh, well, an appendix isn't serious, but a gallbladder's another thing. Are you sure she has stones?
Oh, yeah. When she sits down, she rattles something. Like a beanbag.
Well, Higgins, under these circumstances, I can see you do need money.
Oh, yes, Mr. Weemish.
How do you know that 300 will be enough? Will 300 be enough?
Well, because that's all the Easter outfit costs. It costs that, you know. The Easter outfit costs is all that.
Easter outfit? So, Higgins, you wanted the money for clothes after all.
Well, yes, I did, Mr. Weemish. I've worked for you for a long time. And I thought you might be willing to help me get a little joy out of life.
Higgins, I'm going to help you with just one thing. And that's out that door with my foot. Now, get out!
Look, I could cry, too. If it hadn't been for your hitting Pamela, I'd have gotten the money from Mr. Richardson. Now, look, it's high time you learned to control your temper like I do. For instance, when I was plenty mad, Mr. Weemish wouldn't lend me that money. I felt like hitting him, too. But do you know why I didn't?
Because you were a coward.
I just know how to control myself. So instead, I came home and used this piece of paper to let off my steam. I wrote down every nasty thing I wanted to say to Mr. Weemish. After that, I felt better.
You did?
Yes. And that's what I want you to do hereafter, when you're mad at Pamela. Write down every nasty thing you want to say and write it just like a letter.
Mm-hmm.
And after you get it down on a piece of paper, you'll feel better.
I think I'll feel better if I write the stuff down on my blackboard.
Why?
Well, after I finish writing, I could hit her over the head with it.
You're not going to hit anybody. You're going to hold your temper like I do. You understand? You're going to have my control. What are you bawling about?
You scared me.
Well, just remember, hereafter, no hitting, just writing.
I'll remember, Daddy.
Well, Lancelot, here's my dress and hat all wrapped up, ready to go back.
And here's mine.
My suit's in this box. I feel awful.
So do I. I was really counting on attracting a lot of attention in that outfit. Now I'll have to march in the Easter parade without a thing to wear.
Gee, that way you'll attract even more attention.
Oh, you be quiet. This is all your fault anyway, and...
I'll get it. Hello.
Hello, Higgins. This is Mr. Weemish.
Oh, yes, Mr. Weemish.
Higgins, I just got through giving my kids their Easter outfits. They were awfully happy, and it made me happy. Then I got thinking about you. Higgins, I'm sorry about this morning. That 300 loan will be in the mail for you in the morning. And happy Easter.
Oh, gosh. Thanks a million, Mr. Weemish. Goodbye. Vera! Snooks! We can keep the clothes.
You mean Weemish is loaning us the money after all?
Yes. Snooks, you see there? If I'd told off Mr. Weemish instead of writing those things down on the paper, he'd never have given me the money. So, you see, it really works.
Well, I've been doing it too, Daddy. This morning I got mad at Pamela again, so I wrote down every nasty thing I could think of, just like it was a letter.
Well, that's wonderful.
Then I mailed it.
You didn't? Oh, no, those letters are just to let off steam. You're not supposed to mail them.
Well, I didn't know that. I think you're going to be mad at me.
Huh?
Well, when I mailed my letter to Pamela, I also mailed the one you wrote to Mr. Weenie.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah, I think you...
Oh, hello there, Snooks. What can I do for you?
Would you give me some candy, Mr. Wilson?
Oh, I'm sorry, Stephanie, candy, but here, how would you like a shiny new penny?
I'd rather have a dirty old dime.
Now, look, young lady. It's time you realize money doesn't grow on trees.
Well, where does it grow?
It doesn't. You have to earn it. And all these days, you have to earn a lot, the way prices are increasing. See this paper here?
Mm-hmm.
It says even castor oil is going up.
Yeah. Well, the only time castor oil bothers me is when it's going down.
Snooks, why don't you try earning your spending money?
I would if I could get a nice soft job like yours.
Oh, you're right. Mine is an easy job. The easiest job in the world is selling Tums. Actually, I don't have to sell Tums at all. You millions of Tums users are doing it for me. Sure, you tell your friends how speedily Tums relieve heartburn, ease away the gnawing distress of over-acid stomach, help you feel better fast. So they try Tums and pass the good news along to their friends. And I say thank you, friends. Keep up the good work. Just be sure to add, the price of Tums has not gone up. Still only 10 cents a roll, 3-roll package, a quarter everywhere. Ask for T-U-M-S, Tums for the tummy. And now, here's Snooks again.
Well, Snooks, fortunately for you, I was able to intercept that letter at the office before Mr. Weemish got it.
I'm glad, Daddy.
But you might have cost us not only our Easter outfits, but my job as well.
Yeah, lucky I didn't.
Then there wouldn't be any money to buy you any clothes at all.
Yeah.
You'd have nothing to wear.
Yeah, I'm lucky.
You couldn't go outside and play.
Boy, I sure am lucky.
Or go to school.
I couldn't go to school.
No.
Gee, I know this luck couldn't last. I just knew it.
Oh, fine. Good night, Snooks.
Good night, Daddy. And good night, everybody.
Mothers, when your husband or children are out of sorts because they need a laxative, don't add to their distress by giving them harsh drugs or phenol derivatives. Give them Nature's Remedy, better known as NR tablets. NR tablets are all vegetable. That's why they give such gentle yet thorough relief. Why people feel fine after taking. Get NR for adults, chocolate-coated NR juniors for children, and others whose requirements are less. Only 25 cents a box. Money back if not delighted. NR tonight, tomorrow, all right.
The Baby Snooks Show came to you from Hollywood and was produced by Arthur Stander and written by Bob Fisher and Arthur Stander. Also, the cast for Arlene Harris as Mummy, Frank Nelson, Elvie Allman, Ken Christie, and Fred Shields. Don't forget to listen to the Baby Snooks Show every Tuesday at the same time. This is Don Wilson reminding you that night and day, at home or away, always carry Tums, T-U-M-S, Tums for the tummy.
Now enjoy the Bob Hope Show.
Well, we can enjoy Bob Hope next, as announced, but we will have that in a future date for sure. We will enjoy a comedy, however, and this is called Bright Star. From 1953, Scientific Living.
Irene Dunn, Fred McMurray Show. Starring Irene Dunn as Susan and Fred McMurray as George. Together in a gay, new, exciting comedy adventure, Bright Star. Irene Dunne, Fred McMurray Show, starring Irene Dunne as Susan Armstrong, owner and editor of the Hillsdale Morning Star, and Fred McMurray as George Harvey, Susan's ace reporter. And today at the news, we find the team of editor-reporter functioning as smoothly as they usually function.
About this editorial on widening Vine Street, don't you think that maybe we're...
I'm reading, George.
Oh, congratulations. But on this editorial...
I've got to get through with this book, George, and I haven't got much time. It's Dr. Hawker's latest. Look at your mind through a microscope.
See anything?
A very obvious remark. You are familiar with Dr. Hawker's syndicated column on scientific living, which we are lucky enough to run in our paper.
I live as unscientifically as possible.
No, that's hardly a news item. Dr. Hawker is coming to Hillsdale on a lecture tour, George, and he's going to be here this afternoon.
Oh, good.
Naturally, I want to be familiar with his book.
Well, don't you worry about it, Susan. You just turn old Hawker over to me. I'll take him night clubbing tonight with a couple of friends, and he'll think that the Hillsdale Morning Star is the greatest little paper in the entire country.
George, Dr. Lionel Hawker is not a corset salesman. Through his column, he guides the lives of millions of Americans daily. And
look at us.
And it's extremely important that he be received here in this office by someone of intelligence and understanding.
Oh, me, obviously.
Therefore, George, I shall want you to remain as far away from the office as possible the entire afternoon.
Susan, there are times when I doubt that you care.
No, it isn't really that, George. It's just that your manner at times, well, it's...
All right. Shall I stand in the cellar all afternoon?
Oh, no, of course not. I have an assignment for you. At the Abernathy College for Girls.
Well?
You're to interview Dean Abernathy.
Why?
Well, she's incorporated her social theories in a new book, George, and it's called Why Men.
Why Men?
Mm-hmm. So if you don't mind, I can get on with Dr. Hawker's book now.
Oh, sure. Pardon me for taking up your time.
George, you're not angry with me.
Me? Angry? Of course not. All you did was insult me, seek to hide me in the cellar like a poor relation, and compare my popularity with that of bubonic plague. I am leaving, Miss Armstrong, and it is doubtful that I shall return.
George! Sorry, Mr. Harvey, I was just emptying the wastebasket.
Sammy, you have just ruined my most effective exit in years.
Excuse me, young man.
Yes, sir.
This is the office of the Hillsdale Morning Star.
Yes, sir.
I, young man, am Dr. Lionel Hawker.
Oh, Miss Armstrong's expecting you, Dr. Hawker.
Ah.
Miss Armstrong's office is right through there, Dr. Hawker.
Thank you, young man. Thank you. Miss Susan Armstrong?
Why, yes. Oh, Dr. Hawker.
Who else?
Well, won't you come in, Doctor? I can't tell you how honored we are to have you here in Hillsdale.
Thank you.
I guess just about everybody in town has been reading your book.
I just checked the bookstore. 2 copies have been sold.
Oh, well, those 2 copies certainly have gotten around. Won't you sit down, Dr. Hawker?
Miss Armstrong, you are a very beautiful young woman.
Well, thank you.
You are living scientifically?
Well, I try to.
Married?
No.
Engaged?
Well, no.
In love?
No. I mean, well, there is someone, but...
Uh-huh. You are not living scientifically. You are in love, but not married. You must put yourself in my hands.
Oh, but really, Doctor...
It is nothing. Shall we say this evening at your home?
Well...
Using the Hawker method, we shall have you engaged in a matter of hours. Well, a few days, married. Soon, the patter of tiny feet growing swiftly to healthy adults and all buying the books of Lionel Hawker. It is beautiful to contemplate.
Doctor...
Science, I love you. Shall we say tonight at 8?
Yes, 8 will be fine.
At 8, you will start to live. Until then...
Phew! What time is it, Patience?
10 to 8, Miss Susan. Why?
10 more minutes before I start to live.
How's that again?
That's when Dr. Hawker's coming.
Oh, does he hold you up by the feet and spank you?
Scientific living, Patience. It's something like he describes in his chapter on come out from behind yourself and live.
Well, that sounds like a halfback running around his own end.
And it's so true, Patience. We apply science to everything. Machinery, atomic energy, mass production, to everything but our everyday lives. And that's what I'm going to start doing tonight.
Does George know about this?
Oh, he will. He certainly will.
Well, when you get George in a test tube and put him over a Bunsen burner, call me. That I want to see.
Miss Armstrong's residence?
Come in. She's expecting you, Dr. Hawker.
Ah, you know my name.
Read your column for years. I wrote you for advice when I was thinking about being a housekeeper.
And thanks to a correct and scientific choice, you have enjoyed many years of happy living in your chosen profession.
Sure. Except you advised me to become a tomato picker. Miss Armstrong is in the living room.
Oh, poor woman. She must be terribly unhappy. The lovely Miss Armstrong. A charming home. Charming.
Thank you. Won't you sit down, Doctor?
Now, let me see. I have your problem firmly in mind. A mother fixation on the part of your emotionally immature husband with a consequent rejection of the responsibilities of marriage.
Dr. Hawker, I'm not married.
Of course. I have your case firmly in mind. As I say in my chapter on make your brain a filing cabinet, one should always... Well... Not married, huh?
Oh, I've had my chances, of course, but...
Science has taken you over. Marriage, my dear young lady, is merely a problem in scientific selling.
Selling?
Scientific selling. You have heard of the AIDA method?
No, I don't believe I have.
Used by our largest sellers of consumer goods. What has worked for them will work for you.
Well, that's very interesting.
Let us think of you first, not as Susan Armstrong, but as a refrigerator, right?
Well, I'll try.
Now, we wish to sell this refrigerator. AIDA. First, A. You must attract the attention of the prospect.
Well, how do I do it?
Anything at all. Strike a match. Ask him if he has ever been to Alaska. Anything, but get his attention.
Get his attention.
Next, I. Arouse his interest in the refrigerator. Demonstrate some of its unique features. Or in other words...
Dr. Hawker, couldn't I be something else instead of a refrigerator?
Why, certainly. How about a vacuum cleaner?
Well...
Or a garbage disposal.
I'll be a refrigerator.
Good. Next. D. Generate in the prospect a desire for the refrigerator.
Mm-hmm. Now, well, what's the next step?
Again, A. And this time, action.
Well, couldn't we just skip the first three steps?
Oh, not at all. Having secured the prospect's attention, having aroused his interest in the product, having instilled in him a desire to own the product, all that remains is to show him how quick and easy it is for him to take the final step. He buys the refrigerator.
Well, I'm game for anything. George is coming over later this evening. I'll try it out.
Miss Armstrong, as so many before you, you will find the Hawker principles... utterly infallible.
Really? Well, it's such a queer feeling. I don't know whether I'm about to be engaged or defrosted.
Well, I was telling you about my interview with Dean Abernathy this afternoon, Susan. Her theory is that eventually men can be done away with. And then...
George.
The funny thing is, she's not bad-looking in a battle-axe sort of way.
George.
Hmm?
A. Attract the attention of the prospect. Light a match. Ask if he has ever been to Alaska. Get his attention.
You wanted something, Susan?
George, have you ever been to Alaska?
As a matter of fact, I have.
What?
It's funny you're asking that. I took a trip up there one summer while I was in college. Why, I could talk for hours on the totem poles alone. You see...
Go on, George. Do go on. So much for step number one. George.
Yes, Susan?
Arouse the interest of the prospect. Demonstrate to him some of the unique features of the product.
George, have you ever noticed something?
What's that?
How you can work practically side by side with a person for months and months and never really see them. For instance, I never noticed until now the way your profile in a certain light reminds me of Barrymore's.
Well, he wasn't bad either.
And you most likely never knew how I, for instance, adore cooking.
I thought Patience did all the cooking.
Oh, that's just when I don't have the time.
Cooking, huh? Well, well.
And you probably haven't any idea about my other passion in life. Darning socks.
Really?
Really.
Susan.
Yes, George.
What you just told me. You know I'm a bachelor.
I gather that, yes.
You won't laugh at me if I get up the courage to ask you something.
I won't laugh, George.
Promise?
Promise.
Well, Susan, would you show me how to darn socks?
So much for step number two.
What time is it, Susan?
Oh, it's early yet.
Generate in the mind of the prospect a desire. Desire.
Mind if I switch on the radio?
No, go right ahead.
Good band.
Yeah, not bad.
You wouldn't care to dance.
Why not?
Why, George?
Oh, I have my moments.
Look out. Look out. And see.
Oh, this is nice, isn't it? Music. Dancing. You, of course.
Yes, George.
Susan, it's funny. I don't know. I feel like something's come over me.
Action. Having secured attention, aroused interest, instilled in the prospect a desire, show him how easy it is to take the final step. Action.
George.
Hmm?
You said something had come over you. What?
I can't explain it, Susan. It's strange. It's almost like I was getting a thought wave from you. Almost as if you were impelling me to take some action.
Yes, George.
Susan, you know, I have the strangest desire.
What?
I know it's irrational and irresponsible and everything else, but...
But
I want to go out and buy a refrigerator.
Oh, no.
And now back to our two stars, Irene Dunne and Fred McMurray, and the second act of our story. Irene, that is Susan, didn't have too much success with Dr. Hocker's principles for scientific living when it came to applying them to Fred, and that is George. To anyone who knows George, this was not altogether unexpected.
I'm leaving for work now, Patience.
All right, Miss Susan. Oh, I've been reading that book of Dr. Hocker you brought home. Look at Your Mind Through a Microscope.
Yes.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. He's got a chapter in there on the scientific way to capture a mate, the AIDA method. And I was thinking that it might be just the thing for you to try out on...
Patience?
Yes?
I tried it.
No good.
Nothing.
Well, Dr. Hocker says in Chapter 8, if you have a problem, sleep on it.
Patience, I tried that, too.
What happened?
Woke up with a very wrinkle problem. Oh. See you this evening, Patience.
See you this evening.
Read Dr. Hocker's column this morning, Mr. Harvey?
Can't say that I have, Sammy. What vital message is he giving to waiting America?
Start the day with a smile.
I'd rather start it by going back to sleep.
This morning, try greeting your associates not with a sour look, but with a bright, beaming smile that says, "Isn't it great to be alive?"
Yeah, well, try anything once.
Here comes Miss Armstrong.
Oh. Good morning, Susan. Isn't it great to be alive?
Ha!
Well, Sammy, what else is new? Are the storm signals still posted?
Come in, George. I want you to set up some shots with our photographer. Dr. Hawker will be here this morning.
Sure, Susan. And I asked Dean Abernathy to come in for some pictures, too. You know, the woman who wrote Why Men? A crackpot.
I think she has a very sensible thesis.
Now, Susan.
Good morning, Miss Armstrong. And this is...
George Harvey, Dr. Hawker, an employee.
An interesting face. Improbable, but interesting.
Thank you.
And how did you make out last night, Miss Armstrong, with my AIDA experiment?
I resent having things spelled out in front of me.
Oh, he is irritable. Hasn't he had his NAP?
Dr. Hawker, this is the subject of the experiment.
What?
Oh. And?
Nothing.
I think you're just as well off. However, scientific methods, Miss Armstrong, properly applied, will always...
Am I interrupting?
Oh, Dean Abernathy. Come in.
Thank you.
You know our Mr. Harvey, of course.
Of course.
And this is Dr. Hawker, Dean Abernathy. I'm sure you've read his column.
You're in town again?
Hello, Violet.
You two know each other?
Unfortunately, yes. I should have thought you'd have given up by now, Lionel Hawker.
Well, if at first you don't succeed...
Miss Armstrong, Mr. Harvey... I shall return at a time when your business with Dr. Hawker is completed.
But...
Good day.
Well, that was peculiar.
Yeah. What's the story, Dr. Hawker?
Merely our little misunderstanding which time and scientific principles will... I might as well admit it. Miss Armstrong, Mr. Harvey... I, Lionel Hawker, outstanding exponent of successful scientific living in the world today, I am a failure.
But you can't be.
A failure. For years I have pursued Violet Abernathy with an ardor unmatched since Antony and Cleopatra. And for years I, who have counseled millions on how to love and be loved, I have been utterly and completely spurned. A failure.
Oh, now, cheer up, Doctor. You know, start the day with a smile.
George, where are you going, Doctor?
Where? I think I shall kill myself.
Isn't that sad, George?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, very sad.
We've got to do something for him.
Sure.
The world's greatest exponent of success in love with a woman who hates men... We've got to help him.
Well, we might give him a copy of his own book.
No, the time for books is past, George. Get your hat. We're going after Dr. Hawker.
No, it's no use, Mr. Armstrong, Mr. Harvey. For the first 19 years, I thought she was merely being coquettish. Now I'm convinced she means it.
Dr. Hawker, look where we are.
Isn't this the Abernathy College for Girls?
It certainly is.
George. Now, Dr. Hawker, you go right into her office and sweep Dean Abernathy right off her feet. You know, the AIDA system.
Oh, I couldn't do that.
Why not, Doctor? Show her the real aggressive you.
She knows the real me. She hates me.
Oh, nonsense. You just don't have faith in your own methods. You know what has worked for the largest firms in America.
Well, I... Oh, no, it wouldn't work for me.
Why, of course it would. George, demonstrate the system for Dr. Hawker.
Who, me? On Dean Abernathy?
Oh, no, I didn't mean that. Come over here, George.
Now, look, Susan, I'm not going to...
Desperate times call for desperate measures. Now, look, we've got to restore Dr. Hawker's confidence.
But why?
Well, now, never mind why. Use his system. Look, sweep one of those young students off her feet.
Oh, but these are Abernathy students, Susan. They're man-haters like the dean.
George Harvey.
Oh, all right. I'll try.
Good. Try this little blonde coming along the walk. The one with that freshman beanie.
Oh.
Now, go ahead, George. Go ahead.
All right. Excuse me, miss.
Yes?
Have you ever been to Alaska?
I hate all men.
There you see, Susan. It's like I said.
Try step number two, George.
Well, you wouldn't be interested in a refrigerator.
Oh, I hate all men. Especially tall, slim men with wavy hair and hazel eyes and little boy smiles. I hate all men.
You see, Susan, she says she hates
all men. You're doing fine, George. You see, Dr. Hawker?
I can hardly believe it's my own system.
You see, young lady, this particular model I'm demonstrating has certain features
Yes?
Would you mind not standing quite so close? You're breathing on my tie.
I know what men are. Pursuing ever, seeking to capture, dominating helpless womanhood.
No, really. I'm afraid you have the wrong idea. Men are... hey, what are you doing?
I hate all men. Well.
Well, she certainly hated men, all right.
Yes, I know. Like a cat hates cream.
And you think that if it worked for Mr. Harvey, it would work for me?
Of course. Confidence, that's all you need.
Right. As you put it in your book, Doctor, do it now.
Well...
Now, you go in there and assert yourself, Doctor. You know what you say. What the world thinks you are, you are.
I told you. She knows what I am.
You won't go in and overwhelm her.
I can't. I am a failure.
All right. George, you and Dr. Hawker wait here. I'm going in and use my own system.
Well, Susan, do you think it's safe?
Perfectly. Dr. Hawker, what has worked for 4,000 years will work for you.
But
let her go, Dr. Hawker. In moments like this, there's no use arguing with her.
Come in. Miss Armstrong, what can I do for you?
Dean Abernathy.
It's not about Lionel Hawker.
I'm afraid it is.
Miss Armstrong, for 20 years I've told him repeatedly that I will have...
I've come to you as one woman to another because I feel it's the only honest thing to do.
What is?
I've come to ask you to give him up.
Me?
Oh, I know what you're thinking of me. Believe me, I thought all these things of myself... But I'm afraid I can't help myself. You know Lionel.
You're not quite sure I do.
I can't excuse myself. I can only say it all happened so quickly.
What did?
It. One moment, we were almost strangers. The next, he caught my attention almost hypnotically. And then I felt a strange urge of interest. And then I was struggling weakly in a whirlpool of desire. And then...
Then?
You must give him up.
Miss Armstrong, this is Lionel Hawker you're talking about.
The real Lionel Hawker.
And he's caught you in a whirlpool?
Oh, I know he's cool and calculating and scientific, and I'm just a woman, a plaything to him, but...
I never knew he was so playful.
Dean Abernathy, I can only ask you, will you give him up?
Miss Armstrong... I'll never give him up.
Good for you.
What?
I mean, good for you and tragic for me. But I'll get along somehow.
Where is he?
Outside the door. I'll tell him to...
Excuse me, Miss Armstrong. I'll tell him. Lionel?
Yes, Violet?
Lionel Hawker, have you...
Yes?
Have you ever been to Alaska?
Violet. You mean...
I certainly do.
But I thought you... Alaska?
You see, Dr. Hawker, as I interpret it...
Never mind, George. Get your kayak and let's paddle off home.
Mm-hmm.
Our stars, Irene Dunne and Fred McMurray, will be back in a moment.
Susan, I have to hand it to you.
You do, George?
That was pretty smart the way you figured out that Dean wasn't a man-hater and a little jealousy would bring her around.
Why, thank you.
Of course, I knew it all the time myself.
Oh?
Sure. No woman in the world really hates men.
How do you know?
Dr. Hocker told me. And that theory of his isn't bad either. AIDA. Alaska...
Totem pole.
Sure. There's just one thing about that Alaska part I still don't understand.
Yes?
Where can you find an Eskimo who needs a refrigerator?
Oh, George.
Irene Dunne and Fred McMurray will be back next week in another exciting comedy adventure in the gay new series, Bright Star. This is Wendell Niles inviting you to join us then.
Well, that's it for this week. We'll be back next week with some more great old-time radio, so be sure to make it. Until then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.